Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games, only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And RB Brad Jackson.
This week we're going to be talking like pirates, because we're doing talking about Pirates of the Caribbean, and it's five movies based off a Disney ride. Yes. Of all the things to generate a movie franchise over. But before we get into that,
Johnny Depp needs more money.
Exactly. So the fifth movie should have been called Johnny Depp and the Search for More Money. But yeah, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we've got something from Pepe Garcia and My Father's Cigars. This is going to be the La Antigüedad.
Yeah, you know, since Father's Day is coming up, and also if you watch the Pirates of the Caribbean series, like, fatherhood seems to be a big theme throughout those movies, so we figured we'd go with a My Father's Cigar to stay with the theme and this time of year.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is going to, you know, sport the Ecuador Habano wrapper coming out of Nicaragua.
It's the going Rosado to... Rosado Escuro.
Yes.
Habano, to be exact.
And, you know, so right off the bat, I love it.
It's got a very good, yeah, like you said, it's got a very good mouthfeel. It's definitely, you know, very, like, smooth elder leaf. But yeah, the inside has a double Nicaraguan binder, one Corillo and the other Corojo. Inside is a blend of mostly Nicaraguan tobaccos from three prominent going regions, all age a minimum of 3.5 years. So yeah, this is supposed to be on the medium to full size. So,
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say with the, you know, the Habano wrapper and the spice that it brings, which people that have listened to the podcast know I'm a big fan of. So, you know, I'm going to put this up there, you know, right now, right off the bat, this is leaning more toward full for me.
Yeah, it's definitely got a kick up front. So, yeah, I'm hoping that kind of maintains throughout.
But, you know, I'm definitely enjoying it. And, you know, I mean, this just stays true. Like, my father, they have been putting out some really good cigars at really good price points. And, you know, I can't say I've smoked a bad one yet.
Yeah, my father's definitely a good brand. I've not smoked a lot of their stuff, but every one I've had has been on point. And, you know, since we're going to be talking about pirates here in a minute, you know, if you're going to sail around the world doing some pirate stuff, hunting for booty, what should you bring with you? Call in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergyDrink.com, or no, StrikeForceEnergy.com. Got to let myself there. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your orders and subscriptions. They have the original flavor. They have lemon, grape, orange. They ship it worldwide. So even if you're, you know, a Pirate of the Caribbean, you can get that 750 milliliter bottle. Mix it with your rum, which I highly recommend that. You know, if you want to go all the way up, just a little rum and Strike Force.
Watch out for that East India Trading Company.
Yeah. They might get you in some trouble. So try not to get hung for piracy while you're enjoying your Strike Force energy. And with that, we'll be right back. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. Are you ready to talk about pirates?
Piracy, huh? I thought there are FBI warnings against that.
Yep, we're not talking about the illegal downloading of movies, which we may or may not participate in. Or are we talking about modern-day Somali pirates and whatnot? No, we're talking about the classic pirates and the Pirates of the Caribbean movie franchise.
Woohoo!
Because we've just recently gotten the fifth and what may be the final installment of the pirate franchise, depending on how well it does.
But, I mean, and we'll go into it more later, so we'll give you folks spoiler alerts before we get there. Let's just go ahead and let's just take it from the top. Let's talk about the franchise overall. Johnny Depp needs money. This film series has grossed over $1 billion. I'm sure he's banked on it.
Yeah, because, as we talked about in the intro, based off a ride at Disney World. Because Disney up until, they've always made G-rated movies, either the cartoon movies or the few family-friendly live-action movies that they've made over the years. This was their first, attempt at almost an action movie. I mean, it was the first PG-13 rated movie that Disney ever released. And this is before they owned Marvel and these
the rest
big,
of the conglomerates.
Star Wars and everything else. So this was their first attempt of doing something that wasn't a children's movie vehicle.
Yeah, which, I got to hand it to them. I mean, I feel like Pirates of the Caribbean, it's always been enjoyable, and it's been something that, it wasn't over the top bloody or anything else. So, I wouldn't necessarily, call it kid friendly, but, if you got 10 or 11 year old that's mature and understands, the difference between films and reality, there's not a lot of harsh language or anything else there. So,
yeah, the worst she probably gets a bugger or some other English thing that most kids wouldn't understand was what it means either. But, other than they weren't really ghost pirates because they were still technically alive.
Yeah, technically.
They were undead pirates.
Zombie pirates, they'd be.
But the effects on the zombie pirates were, in this first film, was freaking amazing. We're getting ahead of ourselves here. The first movie, 2003's Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, directed by Gore Verbinski, made for $140 million, made $654 million.
Yeah, and there's actually a video game, too, The Curse of the Black Pearl. So, once again, there was a lot of cross-promotion with the franchise, and it's based on a ride. Now we got video games, we've got the films and everything else. So it's a huge marketing ploy.
Oh yeah, Disney definitely, if nothing else, does merchandising very, very well.
Pirates with lightsabers.
And I don't know how many Halloweens or Dragon Cons you see somebody dressed as Captain Jack Sparrow. Pretty much any time someone tries to go out dressed as a pirate, half the time people are like, "Hey, it's Jack Sparrow." He's become the fill in for general pirate. If you're a pirate, people aren't like, "Oh, it's a pirate." No, it's like, "Oh, it's Captain Jack Sparrow." Screw you! I'm just a fucking pirate. My name's Steve. I'm Pirate Steve. Also, another good Hollywood pirate, Pirate Steve from Dodgeball.
Yes.
R. Peter.
I just feel bad for Blackbeard. He's just not getting the recognition he deserves. Or Hook, for that matter. Disney's had a lot of other great pirates that...
Yeah, and Disney does have a long history of pirates.
As much as they hate piracy.
That's now that I think about it, I am kind of surprised that they never worked in a Captain Hook cameo or something.
that would be great.
Jack's father's Captain Hook. Oh, but yeah, starring Johnny Depp as the aforementioned Captain Jack Sparrow, and Orlando Bloom as Will Turner, and Keira Knightley as Elizabeth Swan. And the movie starts off with...
Mrs. Swan to you.
Yeah. How many times must I tell you to call me Elizabeth? Always once more, ma'am.
So gentlemanly.
But yeah, the movie starts off with, you know, her as a kid traveling across the ocean from England because her father's been promoted to governor of Port Royal, somewhere in the Caribbean. And they find a shipwreck and save the lone survivor, which is a young boy, but he happens to be wearing a pirate medallion. So she hides the medallion to protect him, not knowing that it's the key to a long curse.
Arr.
As most pirate tales begin with. And then you fast forward 8-9 years or so, and the young pirate lad has grown up to be a blacksmith and a swordsman, and she's the lovely daughter of the island governor, and... Here comes Captain Jack, who is one of the worst pirates.
I mean, in a way.
But he's also the luckiest son of a bitch, because the whole thing is he's trying to get his ship back, a.k.a. the Black Pearl, which was his ship, but he got mutinied, and, you know, the ship was taken over by his first mate, Captain Barboza, played by Jeffrey Rush, who was one of probably, like, the best villains. I mean, he's just such, like... And throughout the series, he kind of becomes one of the good guys and is, like... But he's just such larger than life. I mean, he's, like, a scene-stealing mofo in, like, every shot he's in.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, for him to not be the, you know, lead roles, I mean, he definitely steals the thunder. Like, you know, I mean, I'll give Johnny Depp, you know, props, whatever. Yeah, he makes, you know... A relatively good pirate with a bit too much of a conscience, so it's not the, you know, typical pillage everything, leave them nothing mantra that they talk about having.
And that conscience always gets them in trouble.
Yes.
But...
that damn compass.
Yeah. If he had not have been thrown off the boat onto an island by his crew... He would have also been cursed because they went and stole some Aztec gold that happened to be cursed and turns them all into undead pirates. They can't die, but they can't enjoy life either. And the only way to break the curse is to get all the gold back and give them a little blood sacrifice to appease the Aztec gods there. And so they can become human again. And unfortunately, the last little doubloon got lost along with its original owner, Bootstrap Bill Turner, who just happens to be Will Turner's dad.
Spoiler.
And of course, the Disney, you know, yes. Will, I am your father.
Absolutely. Like, I was almost waiting, like, on one of those bad, like, Will is actually Elizabeth's brother or something. Like, dude, you're crushing on your sister.
Yeah, so, of course, the gold medallion gets accidentally dropped in the ocean when Elizabeth faints because she's trying to wear a corset that's too tight. Anybody who's into steampunk and stuff knows that feeling.
I hate it when my corset's too tight.
But yeah, once the...
It's my chest armor.
Yeah, once the coin dips in water, it summons the Black Pearl. They're attacked. They kidnapped her, and young Will is forced to rescue... Jack to get to rescue his girl and go fight some zombie pirates. I mean, not a bad, like, out of the five, this one probably is the best of the bunch. As far it could have been, if they made no more movies, it could have been a great standalone film.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, it kind of left me wanting more, you know, to the story and stuff. I mean, so, yeah, it could have been, but, you know, I would have been like, I anticipated there being sequels, you know?
Oh, yeah,
like, Disney doesn't do anything one-off.
But I think this movie was the perfect Jack story. Because, like, in the next two movies we'll talk about, it really became the Will and Elizabeth movies.
Yes.
Like, where Jack was just kind of a background character through most of it.
Well, you got to have that love story in there.
Yeah, because,
so.
Like I said, you know, they were kind of, their story was, was, you know, was a good amount in the first movie, but it's Jack's supposed to, you know, Johnny Depp's the main guy on the call list there. It's supposed to be his movie, but then the following two movies, it's very not his movie. It seems like it's very much more focused on them two, and Jack just happens to be along for the ride.
Well, and you know, to me, I think that's kind of what I enjoyed about the film, is because it wasn't just centered on Jack. It was, all right, you've got Will and Elizabeth, you've got Jack, you've also got Bill, you've got all these other character stories as well, so, you know, you're almost getting like a Iliad or an epic or something, you know, throughout the, you know, film series. And that, for me, is, you know, what made it interesting and made it fun, you know, because for it to just be Jack Sparrow, to me, would be like, all right, he's always, you know, losing a ship, or, you know what, he's drunk and hilarity ensues. Like, it would just be kind of boring and bland and way too predictable, I think. It would be too desperate of a call to say Johnny Depp needs more money.
Which was the last movie. But, yeah, like, I think one of my favorite lines is when he first, Captain Norrington, who is the not the villain, but he's always in pursuit of Jack in this first movie, when he meets him and he's like, he's lost his ship, and he's like, "You are by far the worst pirate I have ever seen." And he's like, "Or no, worst pirate I've ever heard of." He's like, "But you have heard of me, mate."
Yeah. I mean, and that to me, like, his comebacks and his one-liners and just his on-the-fly wittiness.
Yes.
That's what makes a character for me. Like,
you'll always remember this as the day you almost caught Captain Jack Sparrow. But then his introduction to meeting Will for the first time too is like a great scene where he goes into the blacksmith's office, and the blacksmith's really just the town drunk, and Will's the one who's been doing all the work,
everything else.
And, you know, he comes in and catches Jack trying to get his chains off, and of course, one of the most epic sword fights occur, where they're like, you know, jumping into the rafters off of it gets like bizarre. I mean, it goes on and on.
You know, these films really kind of put parkour on the map. I felt like I would just love to see the behind the scenes and all the rigging and everything else that took place for, you know, some of the action sequences, because I'm like.
Oh, and I like when, like, you know, he pretty much almost loses it, then Jack pulls a gun on him, and he's like, "You cheated." He's like, "Pirate." Duh. But he still has that, like, sense of honor, because he's like, he could have quite easily killed him and escaped, but he's like,
"I have one shot.
I have one bullet, and this is not meant for you." And he's like, you know, or he could have just, you know, stabbed him and took off, but he's got a moral, he's just dirty and, you know, thievering, drunken pirate he is, he has a moral compass. He doesn't like to admit it, but his actions definitely show that he, you know, is not as cutthroat as he would lead people to believe. Yes. Yeah,
you know, and I think that's the Disney really coming through. You know, it's, we want to do a pirate, but we don't want to go off the deep end, you know? We got to do a feel-good pirate.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to... To make him the hero, you've got to definitely include like some redeeming qualities in him. You know, he's got to be the reluctant hero. He can't just be a dirtbag pirate that's, you know, going on this adventure for just the money. But in his case, it's more of the revenge because he's pissed off they stole his ship. It's like... And that final battle when he does catch up with Barbossa and him and Will. Fight the ghost pirates one last time in the room with the Aztec gold. That was an awesome fight scene where, I mean, you got Elizabeth shows up to help Will, and they're, you know, battling back and forth, and the whole, like, two zombie or undead pirates fighting each other. And I think one of my favorite gags is the one pirate who's like the grenader and is always throwing little bombs. Like, once they hit, the moonlight hits them, they turn, like, skeletal. So he sticks the bomb inside the guy and then pushes him out of the moonlight so he can't get the bomb out of his stomach.
Yes.
He's like, "Oh, crap."
There's more than one way to blow up a pirate, or an undead pirate, or skeleton pirate.
And then you have the undead monkey.
The monkey is awesome.
We named the monkey Jack. Oh, and the scene where the ghost pirate or the skeleton pirates attack the Commodore's ship, where they just like, you know, they're like, hey, we're immortal. Let's just walk. We don't need boats. but I gotta say, my two favorite, well, like I said, other than the main cast, the other thing that made this movie and even the following movies great was the awesome supporting cast. You had the two idiot soldiers that Jack first meets that are there throughout the entirety of the series. I think they're like the one, maybe the one or two returning characters that are in every movie is those two idiot British naval soldiers that are just completely incompetent. And then there's their counterparts in the pirate world of the one with the bald one and the one with the eye that are constantly getting like the butt of all the jokes and yes. the calamities. Like when they first, you know, and that line of when they first, you know, find Elizabeth and kidnap her, that hello, Bobbit, is just the creepiest fucking thing. I mean, that's like the creepiest thing they do. The rest of them, they're just bumbling idiots. But that scene was like truly creepy.
That hello, Poppet, that was quoted for, golly, I don't remember how many years after that. Like, if there's a line that's quoted from this movie, it's that.
Yeah, and the other one with Barbossa when he's having dinner with Elizabeth and tells her about the Aztec gold and the curse and all that, and she's like, I don't believe in like ghost stories, and ends up stabbing him and running out, and then sees that the entire crew are skeletons and turns around. He's standing there and he's like, you may not believe in ghost stories, Miss Swan, but I tell you right now, you're in the middle of one, and like steps out and he's all ghostly too.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the supporting cast, I mean, that's ultimately, like I said, if it just centered around Jack Sparrow and without the support, I don't think this, you know, series would have near the success.
And the other big supporting guy is the guy who plays one of the other few people to return for all the movies, Mr. Gibbs, Jack's second in command, who I didn't realize this till I rewatched the first one. In the opening scene, when they're traveling across the with young Elizabeth and young Will, he's on the ship. He was originally a British Navy officer who, at some point, must have fallen on hard times and became a pirate. But he was on the ship. He's the one telling her about curses and whatnot and pirates on the ship. So I was like, I didn't realize that he was like pretty much there from the beginning of this story, and. One detail that I think is cool about his character, too, because like when you originally see him, the whole time he's wearing this jacket with no sleeves. Well, that was like the sign of what they would do to
people
British.
That committed treason, right?
Yeah, they would like rip their sleeves off, and that was you're getting fired out of the Navy, and you're probably going to get executed or whatever. So the fact that he still wears his Navy jacket with no sleeves, it's kind of a cool detail to his character that if you're not paying attention, you might, miss.
Yeah, because I kind of missed that up until... You know, I think it was, you know, when they throw Will in, in the prison and cut his sleeves and
or
stuff.
Or Henry, or whatever his son.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's it, Henry. And that's when, you know, it kind of hit me and I was like, ah.
Yeah, it's like I missed it the first time until I went back and watched after watching the last movie. And then that brings us to 2006, Dead Man's Chest, which was pretty much back-to-back. Dead Man's Chest came out in 2006. At World's End came out in 2007. The first one made for $225 million, made $1.066 billion, with the second one being made for $300 million, made $963 million. But together, because it's pretty much one movie. They filmed a lot of it at the same time. It's just kind of, you know,
which is really weird, you know, between like the, you know... Just talking about the series progression. So you've got the first one, 2003. 3 years to get the second one. And then it's been pretty much, 2007, here's another one. And then, we're going to skip a couple of years. And what was it, 2011 for the third one? So it's...
Our fourth one,
yeah.
Yeah, this one introduced freaking Davy Jones. Yeah, and I like how they, you know, with the follow up movies, they kind of brought in a little bit more of old pirate mythology and stuff.
Yes. Well, I mean, you saw that. I mean, you know, you get a lot of, I mean, the pirate lore and just, you know, a lot of the other, you know, stories that, you know, people have told. And you don't really have to be familiar with pirate movies to, you know, hear of Poseidon and, you know, a lot of the other, you know, characters and stuff like that. So,
yeah, with the...
So it's almost like a combination between, like, almost like Greek mythology, I guess, and...
Yeah. Yeah, because you've always heard of Davy Jones's locker and, you know, and this is something they introduce us to the character. And he's very, almost like a... the boogeyman of the sea. He's like a, like, you know, almost like a demon of sorts. And he's like been cursed to, you know, hunt souls and whatnot. And it's kind of become like, you know, as his soul has been corrupted himself and his crew. So now they're all like, the ship is just kind of like rotting looking and all, and they're all his crew is slowly turning into like, fish people are devolving and becoming part of the ship the longer they're on the ship. And it's played by Bill Nye, who's always like just a creepy bastard and everything. Yes. He is. But yeah, almost a Cthulhu like tentacle beard.
Yeah, which I don't know, like, you know, you get the Kraken. I was really wanting a Cthulhu though. And I guess this is really kind of the, you know, as close as you get, I guess.
Yeah, but speaking of the father's themes, we get to meet Will's father, Bootstrap Bill, who was thrown overboard with the for standing up for Jack when they mutinied, and apparently he got, well, I don't know if you call it saved because he was enslaved to work the Dutchman for 100 years, but apparently that's how Jack originally became captain of the Black Pearl, is he made a deal with Davy Jones to raise the pearl from the depths and make him a captain for 13 years. And then he has to give his soul to, and become part of the crew, and his 13 years are up and now there's a debt come to be paid. And why is the rum always gone?
Yes.
Oh, that's why. Oh, thanks. Cause like the first movie was like, why is the rum gone? You know, cause Elizabeth Burns all, and this one, he's like, you know, trying to plot a course and drinking it in the, why's the rum gone? He gets up and he almost falls over. Oh, that's why. Yeah, I remember now.
The love of rum. It's a pirate's life.
But just the effects in these two movies of the mutinous crew of, you know, weird fish people. And like in the ship itself is just amazingly done.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, the ships are almost as iconic as the actors and actresses themselves. Yeah. Like,
and just the animation in Davy Jones's beard alone, like where he like, you know, pulls out a pipe and like one of the tentacles like lights the pipe and stuff, and it, you know, there's like a, you know, like a squid nose on one side of his face blows the smoke out. It's, yes, just, it's just how those, like, all those tentacles just kind of have a life of their own. It was like just mesmerizing to watch.
Kind of creepy though.
Yeah. tentacle.
Yes. Not the Japanese version of tentacles, but
yeah. But so with this we are introduced to, they were talked about in the first movie, but in this one we're introduced to I believe it was Beckett, the leader of the East India Trading Company, who wants to wipe out all piracy. So he ends up arresting Will and Elizabeth and for releasing Jack at the end of the first movie, and basically tells Will, I'm going to execute her and everybody unless you go find Jack and get me his compass, because he wants to find Davy Jones and become commander of the seas.
Yeah, and, you know, this one here, you know, it's the politics and everything, like, as the series progress are really interesting because, you know, you have the first movie, right? And yes, they're after trying to capture pirates and stuff like that. But the political atmosphere on the second one really becomes, all right, if you've known a pirate if you've helped a pirate, like, you have no rights,
yes.
no freedoms, no, you know, if we sentence you to death, you are sentenced. There is no, you know.
Yeah, and this guy who's the leader of pretty much the merchant class is more powerful than the king or the governor nearly.
Yes.
Like, where he's, you know, he's pretty much a trading company, but he's able to command the you know the British Navy. I mean, it's kind of a weird, you know, thing on, you know, big business profiteering, something like that. You know, kind of like the represents the medieval version of the big bad corporation.
Well, you know,
who wants to stamp out freedom, because
really, kind of what I had flashbacks to is, you know, I attributed it a lot to miners. Like, you know, you hear the songs, I owe my soul to the company store and stuff
yeah.
like that. And, you know, that's what I, you know, was, like, thinking about, you know, as I'm watching this movie and stuff, like, putting it into, you know, more, I guess, modern terms, I suppose. But I don't know. That's the whole political aspect that I'm like, God, that's really interesting.
But, you know, and from the pirate side of things, to them, piracy isn't just about killing and stealing. It to them, it's like the last freedom. Like, you know, being the captain of your own ship, you're the king of your own little kingdom there, and not have to listen to anyone's rules or deal with any kind of society. Where as the power of the East India Trading Company increased, that freedoms get smaller and smaller.
Yes. Which, you know, I thought was kind of cool because, you know, that forced, you know, I mean, you hear, of course, mutiny is a theme that goes on throughout the whole, you know, progression of the series and stuff like that. But, damn it, I lost my train of thought.
mutiny,
It'll come back to me at some other random point. But,
but yeah, in the first of these two movies, it's the whole thing is Jack is because one of the reason why Davy Jones is cursed is because he basically had his heart cut out and now he's like immortal because his heart's hidden somewhere in a chest and he is doomed to pirate the ship, which as we go on, we'll find out was originally not a curse. He was supposed to escort souls of the people lost at sea to the afterlife, but he kind of became corrupted and really, like, he wasn't originally intended to be this evil, you know, vengeful spirit of the sea. He was, you know, pretty much going to be the Grim Reaper and supposed to, like, you know, escort those to the other side. But then he just kind of became, like,
he was almost like the Cherubus, if you will. So, you know, you pay your 2 pences and get to float across the River Styx. And this was the pirate version of that, I felt like.
So, yeah, Jack's trying to find his heart so he can, you know, use it to bargain in his way out of the deal. Will wants to find the heart so he can use it to bargain his father's freedom. And Captain Norrington, who now has kind of become a pirate himself because, you know, in the last movie, he's like, I'm going to give Jack a day's head start. And he fails on his obsession to find Jack and, like, loses his crew and his ship and just becomes a drunk. So he thinks he can take, you know, sell the heart back to the East Indian Trading Company and regain his honor and his command and become a respected officer again. So that, like, three-way sword fight when they find the chest is probably one of the best action sequences in all of these movies, that just,
yes.
as far as, like, a little man-to-man battle. Because, I mean, those three are obsessed with fighting each other, and they can't really tell who they're against. You know, like, at some point, you know, Will and Norrington are fighting Jack, and then Jack's like, well, he's the one that stole your girl, and he's like, he's right. And then they start trying
yes.
to kill each other and it just goes back and forth. And then the whole time you got Elizabeth and our two idiot pirate buddies running around with the chase, being chased by Blackbeard's crew, which some of the best, like, little comedy moments, like the one guy who has, like, a crab for a head and it keeps knocking, his head keeps
yes.
falling off.
It's like, he keeps commanding his body, come back, come back.
I'll leave him and he just has to turn into a crab and follow him. Oh, but yeah, you know, eventually, you know, the East India Trading Company gets a hold of the heart because Norrington steals it from Jack, and he wants to enslave Davy Jones and use his control over the sea to wipe out all pirates and piracy. But before that, you know, since Jack fails to get the heart, the Kraken is unleashed and Jack is, and the Pearl is destroyed. But, you know,
dude, and the cracking, you know, sequences, like seeing the ship just get, you know, splattered in half and everything and all the cannons and stuff, like that to me was, you know, probably, you know, some of the greatest action, you know, too. Like, you know, just you always hear about the Kraken, but to see it, you know, on, you know, the big screen and, you know, how larger than life it truly is just, you know.
Yeah, and in this one, too, like, Jack is kind of a coward through the whole thing, trying to, like, save his own skin. But when his crew is in danger, and he initially flees, and then he's, like, looks at the compass, and he's like, fuck, I gotta be the hero. Goes back to, like, you know, initially fights off the Kraken, and then Elizabeth chains him to the deck, because you realize, like, the Kraken's after him, not us, you know, so, sorry, Jack, but we escaping.
Yeah, but they, you know, I mean, she does give him that departing kiss. That,
yeah.
You know, and I don't know, like, that to me, I was like, so is that the, you know, like, I thought at the time, I'm like, all right, you know, Will's obviously seen them kiss and, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, all right, you know, she no longer wants a good guy. She's going after the pirate and,
but it was, you know, all a trap. How many men have been trapped by a lady's kiss?
Damn succubus.
But in that moment, though, when Jack comes back, and even after he's trapped, he gets out of the chains, but he's like, I'm going to go out like a man. You know, the Kraken coughs up his hat, puts his hat back on, grabs his sword, and just jumps down its throat. And he's like, I'm going to stab you a little bit as I'm on my way down.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was, I don't know. It was rather, rather interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, where this movie left off, like, I really thought that, you know, we'd kind of seen the last of Will, and it was going to turn into the whole Jack and Elizabeth show. Like, that's where I thought the progression went.
But this first of the two is definitely like the Empire Strikes Back of the Pirates trilogy. Because it ends on such a down note. You know, the Pearl's lost, Jack is lost, kind of like Han Solo being carted away by Boba Fett at the end. But they go to the witch, Tia Dalma, and she's like, if there was a way to rescue Jack, would you do it? And they're like, yeah, we would do it. And she's like, well, he may be dead, but there's places that dead men can come back if you can find your way to the, you know, Davy Jones's locker, but you're going to need a captain who knows those waters and has made it back himself. And here comes Barbossa.
Yes.
Oh, and then, like I said, the second movie, they go hunting Jack, and then, you know, once they find him, have to bring together all the pirate lords to fight the East India Company and also, you know, the enslaved Davy Jones. And how their big plan is they're going to unleash Calypso, who is basically the queen of the sea or something like that, who is actually the witch we have already met.
Yep.
Because the pirate...
Calypso is trapped in human form.
And... yeah, by the pirate lord. So they all have to come together and agree to... because it takes, like, all of them to agree and to set her free. And they're like, we'll set you free as long as you help us kill Davy Jones. And, oh, by the way, the person that told us how to entrap you is Davy Jones.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, shit.
It has all come full circle. Or at least I think at this point is full circle. I don't know. That's kind of weird. Like, you have all these competing captains and everything, but then, you know, in the element of evil, like, everybody has to come together and be like, all right, all of our little squimishes and everything no longer matter.
Yeah, but Elizabeth becomes like the pirate lord of the whatever Japanese pirates or Chinese pirates, and gets voted king of the pirates. Because you know that's who has to make the decision on whether or not to free Calypso. But yeah, it's kind of cool that her and Will and all of them like pretty much became pirates through the course. Because you know sometimes being the bad guy is the good guy. Like in these movies, like the people who are supposed to be the good guys are actually evil, and the people that you normally associate being the bad guys are the freedom fighters and whatnot. Kind of like Star Wars, where the yes. Empire is the official government, and the rebels are the. Are the pirates. And I do loved how they introduced Jack's father in this movie, who was played by what's his name, Rolling Stones. I'm having a whole brain fart. Not Mick Jagger, but Keith Richards, who, you know, Johnny Depp said he basically based his portrayal of Jack Sparrow on Keith Richards. Yes. Just the permanently drunk, that's by Keith Richards, mate. So having him play Jack's father was just completely
that was appropriate.
The best. Yes.
Entirely fitting.
But, you know, and then, of course, the final battle ensues. But we also, along the way, learn that whoever kills Davy Jones has to take his place. Because, like I said, there has to be someone escorting the souls. Dutchman. The Dutchman requires a captain. And, you know, Jack is, you know, fully prepared to do it. But then he kind of has that moment of, I can kill him, but... I'm doing this to not become a member of the crew of the Dutchman. And if I do this to save us all, I'm going to be giving myself that fate. But then he doesn't have to make that decision because Will gets stabbed. And the only way to save Will's life is to make him immortal. So they help Will stab the heart and free his father and become the captain of the Dutchman.
Which, I mean, is you know... kind of interesting, you know. I mean, here it is, you're out to save your father and everything, and now, yeah, you've accomplished that, but you yourself are, you know, now in a position to where you're now the, you know, captured. So
yeah, but I do like seeing it's when, you know, I mean, after Jones is killed and you think the Dutchman is destroyed because it goes down the big you know, water spout, but then it comes back up and the ship is like got a new captain, and like the crew is fully restored to human form, and the ship is fully restored to looking like a normal ship and not this demonic ghost ship that it has been. And then they both take on the Beckett and his ship, and that this whole sequence of him like, oh my god, I've lost, and the cannonballs coming from both sides and just ripping the ship apart, and him walking like slow motion through the ship as it just blows up around until he's finally just blown to shit.
Yes, like that to me, I thought was just awesome, you know. And I mean, I do have to give him props though, because as his ship's being blown all to shit, I mean, he's doing a good job of dodging the shrapnel and everything. But I didn't realize the cannonballs exploded too, though. I thought they were just a blunt, like, force. I didn't realize that it was, oh, no, they're going to tear into shit and then they're going to blow up.
Yeah, some of them do. Some of them are just like, you know, lead balls, and then other of them have little explosives in them. Or sometimes it's them hitting the powder kegs of the other ship that causes the things to explode. And you also... the two idiot guards from the first movie are now having to guard the chest on, and they're just like, fuck this. They became pirates. We're like, shit's gotten too weird. We're quitting. So by the end, they're like, they're on the Black Pearl and, you know, they're all dressed up like pirates. Like, yeah, we were here the whole time. Yeah. And everybody's like, they kind of look familiar. Ah, fuck it. They're pirates.
Yeah. Isn't it funny though, how, you know, in the world of, you know, piracy, anybody can be accepted. Well, you're not trying to kill us, so you must be one of us.
And, of course, Barbossa, true to his usual form, you know, freaking steals the Black Pearl again and leaves Jack and Gibbs behind. But Jack is being, good old Jack, stole the map to the Fountain of Youth and has decided he's going to go become an immortal, bringing us to our next movie, On Stranger Tides, directed by Rob Marshall, made for... $410 million made $1.045 billion, which, you know, further pirate lore, brings in Ian McShane as Blackbeard the Pirate. You know, a famous actual pirate that we've heard of, not these, you know, fictional Disney pirates.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, I kind of like that, you know, bringing in stuff that, you know, you actually... recognized from stories and everything. And this is also the first of the films to be put out on 3D and IMAX 3D.
Yep.
And, you know, this one here was rather interesting with the introduction of the mermaids and everything of that nature, too.
Yeah. Because, of course, like, all these pirate movies have some kind of weird supernatural theme to it. And this was the first one that was almost a one-off. You know, they kind of ended Will and Elizabeth's story and went on from there. And one of the cool things, too, is when we get on to the next movie, is part of the curse is the captain of the Dutchman can only step foot on land once every 10 years. So the post-credit scene show him 10 years later coming to land, and there's Elizabeth with, you know, their son. And then 10 years later, we get the next movie, the Dead Man Tell Motels. So it's kind of cool how that fits in that 10-year time
whole
window.
Time went, yep.
But, yeah, Stranger Ties was a weird one, because, you know, you find Jack gets arrested trying to save Gibbs because Gibbs has been captured. You find Barbossa, and he is now a privateer. He's actually working for the government and has become a naval officer, and tells Jack he's lost the Black Pearl was sank and I lost me leg. But you know, as we find out, freaking Blackbeard has a mystical sword that controls his ship, and not only is he taking out rival pirate ships, but in kind of an insult to injury, he doesn't destroy their ship. He shrinks them and puts them in little ships in a bottle.
Yes.
So the Black Pearl still exists. It's just been shrank.
But it's kind of cool, though, like when they show the bottle, because, I mean, the water, the skyline, and everything else.
There's like a little storm in the bottle and stuff. So it's like the ship's on some kind of infinite micro sea. But yeah, since Jack's got his little compass there that can help him find anything, you know, the British government wants him to go find the Fountain of Youth because the Spanish government is trying to find it. And Blackbeard wants to get it because he wants to become the immortal pirate god or whatever. So it's like a three-way battle to try to be the first people to get, you know, to the fountain.
Always this whole greed thing.
It also introduces the character of, Angela, Penelope Cruz, who played Blackbeard's daughter.
Angelica.
And apparently one of Jack's former girlfriends. Because that's something I liked about the films. Like every time a girl hears the name Jack Sparrow, ends up slapping him. He's like, I'm not sure I deserve that. And then later he goes, yeah, I may have deserved that. And then by the third time he's slapped, he's like, I definitely deserved that. But yeah, Jack has to go on this quest to find them and, you know, rescue the pearl and whatnot, and, you know, harvest a mermaid's tear. And like I said, I only saw this movie once. I saw it when it was in theaters, and it wasn't one that I kind of kept rewatching like the original three. But, I mean, it did well. I mean, it made $1 billion, so yeah. Saw this movie.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people did. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, still, you know, I'm kind of like you, where the first three kind of have a special place. You know, when I'm watching Pirates of the Caribbean, these are the first three movies that I'm catching all the time. This one, you know, I think it was cool. I didn't see this in IMAX, but I did see it in the 3D. And, you know, at this time, you know, not every movie had a 3D counterpart. So, yeah. You know, it was kind of cool from that perspective as the visuals and everything else. I mean, you know, I think a lot of times that, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, people think of Avatar and some of the other movies as being visually striking. For me, I don't know. It may just be because I enjoy pirates and stuff like that. But, you know, I almost, you know, put these movies up there above like an Avatar or something. You know, just because the story arcs and everything of that nature.
And some people didn't like it because it didn't have Will and Elizabeth, you know, it was a very Jack-centric story. But I kind of liked it because it had, not only was it a Jack story, but it brought real pirates. I mean, Ian McShane as Blackbeard is badass. And seeing the actual Queen Anne's revenge, which, if anyone who's a student of history, Blackbeard was a scary motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's stories of, you know, freaking when he was finally caught and killed, his head was chopped off and his body like swam around the ship three times before it finally died, and just all kind of crazy stuff. where the, you know, truth of the man's almost as weirder than the Disney fiction of yes. of the guy.
But I mean, you know, it's those stories though that I think, you know, made this, you know, this film in particular that much more enjoyable. I mean, you know, the other ones, yeah, you know, with Calypso and stuff like that, like, yeah, you were getting some, you know, lore and stuff thrown in there, but, you know, there was also a lot of, you know, history, and as, you know, this is kind of a fun action way to learn a little bit about, you know, some of the history and some of the lore and, you know, things that you, you know, were, I mean, you know, like you said earlier, people have heard of Davy Jones' locker and stuff. And, you know, here you are getting you're not just reading it into a story. You actually have a visual element of it.
And Captain Blackbeard's whole motivation is he's trying to become immortal because he apparently was told that he would, because he's into voodoo and all this other stuff, that he would be killed by a one-legged man. So it's kind of cool when Barbossa comes back and he has lost his leg with that in that battle with Blackbeard where he lost the pearl. So he has become that. Yeah, he's kind of created his own demon that's going to take him out by, you know, pissing off Barbossa.
Yes.
Who at the end has the Queen Anne's revenge and becomes goes back to pirating himself.
Absolutely.
And then it gets us to the newest one, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Yep, so at this point, you know, this is your spoiler alert, so we're going to get into it, you know, probably not all of the details, but, you know, you have been forewarned.
Yeah, this one also directed by another new director. The first three were all done by the same guy, because there's, you know, a little bit more continuity with those. This one directed by Joe Chi Ramos and Espen Sanderberg. Only made for $230 million. So far, it's made $508 million. So it's, you know, it's making its money. But
it was just interesting, you know, yeah, how much getting, of a smaller budget that this film had.
And it really felt like it, too. And after going back and watching the original, which was only made for $140, this one still looks cheaper than that original film. I think they blew the entire budget on the Ghost Pirates. Because, like, the rest of the movie just kind of feels cheap. In a way.
Well, you know, for me, I won't necessarily say that it felt cheap. You know, it became much more of a story progression, more so than it was, you know, designed to be an action flick, you know?
Yeah, there was definitely not the big either ship battles or sword fighting sequences that we've had in all the previous incarnations. This was more of a treasure hunting movie, because, like, we get the character.
It almost felt like an Indiana Jones in a way.
Yeah, because we get the character of Henry Turner. Will's son's grown up now and become a sailor, and he is obsessed with all the legends and curses of the ocean because he's trying to figure out a way to rescue his father, much like his father did in the previous movies. And he finds a legend of Poseidon's trident. It's the one thing that can break all curses of the sea. So he enlists the help of Jack, who is now completely washed up. The pearl is still trapped in a bottle, and Barbossa's gone on to be the most successful pirate, you know, with his own, like, not just his ship, but fleets of ships working for him. And even the two idiot guards from the first couple movies are still his, like, you know, right-hand man pirates. But I was disappointed that the two original pirate idiots, with the Wooden Eye and his friend, did not return for this one. I kind of missed those two characters being in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, you've had them throughout.
The two idiot guards kind of took their roles. But, yeah, I kind of missed them. But, yeah, Gibbs was back. You know, pretty much everyone, you know, even Will and Elizabeth briefly.
And this one was kind of weird, too, because, like, The start of this one was really, you know, more so like I was thinking Salem Witch Trials, you know, because the girls are practicing astronomy and stuff like that, and they're like, well, she must be a witch, you know, so they're trying to hang her for being a witch. And, like, I kept having, you know, thoughts of, does she float? Well, she must be a duck, and if she's a duck, she's not a woman, so she must be a witch.
Oh, and the whole, like, because, like I said, Jack is, like, he's got this rickety ship that's, they're not even sure is seaworthy. It's beached. It's, I think it's called like the Drowning Gull. Because he can't figure out how to get the pearl out of the bottle. And like pretty much his crew has all left him because he's just completely worthless. Like they try to rob a bank and they steal a safe and drag it through the city. And it's very much like, I'm like, I think I saw this in one of those Fast and the Furious movies.
Well, I mean, it's just hilarious.
This is the sequence from Fast and the Furious, like whatever, 4 or 5, just with horses instead of cars.
But I mean, holy shit. Like they can't get the vault to break through the wooden walls. So the whole damn bank slides off the foundation. And
oh, but then the doors open. So all the money falls out and they get nothing but like a single like gold coin that Jack pockets as no one's looking. And Jack
and
is,
he's like, you must still pay me.
Yeah.
Why would we pay you when there's no gold?
Yeah, so they all leave him and we find out a little bit about Jack's backstory where he kind of became the, where he got the compass and how he defeated, tricked these pirate hunters, Captain Salazar and some Spanish pirate hunters into wrecking their own ship. And that's how he became a captain and how he got, you know, his compass and whatnot. But he's so down on his luck that he sells the
the compass for like a bottle of rum. Yeah. Only to have it shot. It's like,
yeah.
So he doesn't even get to enjoy it. Yeah.
Oh, and then, you know, he gets captured himself and is going to hang. But yeah, you know, the one thing the captain who gave him the compass is just do not betray the compass because it will bring evil upon you. And sure enough, it frees Captain Salazar, who is now on a vengeance spree to take out Jack. And now his pirates are all like these weird ghost, like half-burned pirates. Like some of them don't even have heads and stuff. But like I said, though, that looked amazing. But everything else just seemed, like I said, it seems like they spent their entire budget on that and the sequence when the seas parted. Like that's where all the budget went. And so like even when you see Will on the Dutchman, you only see like one small piece of the Dutchman. You don't see any of the crew.
Yes.
Like, you know, in the other movies, they had that, you know, great crew with all the weird effects on them. Nothing. You see Will chilling on a boat. That's that's all you get of the Dutchman.
Yeah. But, I will say that, you know, for folks that, you know, wanted the romanticized love story, this is the film. You know,
because you get a replacement for Will and Elizabeth with Henry and the girl whose name I forget at the moment, who was the scientist. It was very much the Elizabeth
Karina.
Character. Karina, yeah, it was very much the Elizabeth character in this film. And to, you know, spoiler alert, to further the father connection. Not only is Henry trying to save his father, she never knew her father, and turns out it's Captain Barbossa.
Yes. But he never, you know, comes out and tells, you know, that I'm your father or anything. Like, I was kind of waiting on that moment, but, you know, it never really quite happened.
Well, they had that moment when they break the curse and the sea starts collapsing in, and Barbossa swings in on the anchor, the pearl, and rescues them all. But she falls off, and he catches her. And she noticed he has this like star tattoo on his arm that was on this book that her father had left for her. And she's like, "What are you to me?" And he says something about like, you know, "You're my real treasure" or something like that.
Yes.
It's kind of, and she realized like, "Oh, this, he is my father."
Yeah.
At the end of it, he's like, you know, he's like call her Miss Smith. And I think he's like, actually, it's Barbossa.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know, you know, but you do get Jack and Elizabeth are, Will and Elizabeth at the end. You get Henry and Karina, and everybody comes together, and there's a good sense of closure. Like, I kind of felt like this is kind of the, all right, we're going to wrap everything up, bring it full circle, and...
Yeah, it was like, and then, of course, you know, Jack has the pearl back because, you know, Barbossa makes a deal with Salazar to help him find Jack, but, you know, he's like, no, this Barbossa guy needs to die too. So I'm going to help you, Jack. But we need a ship that'll outrun the ghost pirates. The only thing fast enough is the pearl. And he's like, yeah, but the pearl's in a bottle. And he's like, but I got the sword. So you know, they bring the pearl back.
But I gotta say, like, you know, that whole launching sequence of the first ship where it's on the railroad tracks and stuff. I was like, and then the Pearl's like, I love it too, where it just breaks and it, you know, lands on the beach and it's like, oh, it's so tiny. Yeah. She needs water.
Yeah. It's like one of those old toys you throw in the water and it grows. Oh. But yeah, but by the end, you know, it kind of, and like anytime something bad happens, they're all like, it's the pirate's life. But by the end, when it's all wrapped up and all the curse has been broken, he's back at the helm of the Pearl. He says the thing he said at the end of the first movie was like, come on, bring me that horizon. You know, it's like, we're back. So, I mean, I think it's the perfect wrap up if the series does end. But they also kind of left it open because you get the post-credit scenes of Will in bed with Elizabeth finally, and he has a nightmare that they never show him directly, but they show the crab hand, so you assume it's Davy Jones has returned for some kind of vengeance. And he wakes up, nothing's there, and it's like, oh, it's just a nightmare. But then you see a couple little barnacles or something underneath the bed, like something actually was apparently there.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, just poking around on the internet, there's a lot of, you know, speculation and theories as to what may be going, you know, to happen in the future, but...
And the director himself has said, no, this isn't the last. There's at least another movie in us, but, you know, I guess it all depends on whether the people involved want to return and how well this one does at the box office, whether or not we get that next installment.
So Johnny Depp, don't go any crazy spending sprees and buy your islands and everything else.
Or he should. That way he runs out of money and has to make another Pirates movie.
I don't know, man. Like, I'm, you know, with all the effects and the technology and everything, I would like to see another, you know, hey, here's, you know, a substantial budget, and I would like to see, you know, some of the effects and some of the action and stuff brought back that, you know, especially the first three films really had.
Yeah, because, I mean, to me, like I said, I think they blew all the budget on the Ghost Pirates because there just wasn't the big action sequences and the epic scale that we're used to in the previous movies. Especially since, you know, this movie still cost more than the first movie, but the first movie looked better visually than this one did. So, you know, perhaps bring Rabisky into coming back for one more, because he definitely has a better visual eye for this sort of thing than the current directors.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt like the intention of this movie was to bring closure and, you know, I mean, the whole theme of fathers and everything else. I mean, this movie was designed to play on emotions, and it achieved that, you know. So I'm not going to knock it from that aspect. But, yeah, I mean, it you know, was much more serious and wasn't quite as quirky as, you know, the previous films.
But also, see, some of my favorite sequences from this movie is when Jack's about to be executed and she's about to be hung, and they're arguing back and forth over who has it worse and who should get executed first. That little comedic element with those two arguing at the gallows was pretty hysterical.
I like that. I think for me the thing that stood out, and I truly laughed at one point, you know, Jack is trying to bargain, you know, and the whole gag of the monkey, you know, Jack, you know, throughout the films does not like the monkey. And anyway, it's like, I want the monkey. And it's like, well, what could you possibly want the monkey for? I want to eat it. And, you know, the monkey freaks out. But, you know, anyway, later on, you know, you got the monkey and it ends up on Jack's shoulder and everything.
Hands him his hat and everything. Yeah. And they're like, all right, we can be friends.
Yeah.
Because both of them are like, yeah, we lost Barbossa. As much as I hated fighting him, he was still kind of, you know, my friend and, you know, the guy who I like to go up against. So it's like, yeah.
It's the pirate's life.
Yeah. As much as those two did not get along, there was always like a element of respect between the two where they would work together if they had to. But then also, probably one of the greatest cameos is to bring another musician into the pirate franchise, freaking Sir Paul McCartney playing Jack's uncle, Jack. Yes. who's also in the prison. Oh, yeah, that sequence with him, and he's like, oh man, how you doing? He's like, well, I'm about to be executed. Oh, you should ask for so and so. He's the best. You know, he's very gentle. Yeah,
he's got very soft hands.
Yeah, tell him I sent you. They'll hook you up.
Yeah, but it's like, what was it? They'll leave your shoes on or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like I said. that was just kind of a funny sequence throughout. So as we kind of wrap things up here, any favorite moments, favorite characters from the series?
I don't know. I'm with you. The two bickering guards, you know, I mean, that was just a funny, hilarious gag, you know. And then, like I said, for the latest movie, you know, the bring of the full circle of, you know, Jack the monkey's, you know, relationship. Like, I enjoyed that. I was like, all right, that's fitting.
And I'd say my favorite non-main character has got to be Mr. Gibbs. He's like he's like almost like the weird father figure or something. You know, he's like the everyman
he's the wise one with all the experience.
Yes, like there's all this weird shit going on around him, but he's just like, that's the pirate's life. This is how it goes, mate. You know?
It's like, you know, it's very much, you know, I mean, I would respect him so much more of a captain than I would Jack any day.
Yeah.
Because it's the guy that's actually going to be able to make a wise decision. But, yeah. I do got to say that
Gibbs is probably the only one that could be a successful pirate, but he's too loyal to Jack to take over.
Well, you know, and I do like the fact, too, where, you know, Jack pockets the book at one point, you know, that's led them to the stars and, you know, to get to the Trident. And, you know, when he, you know, he's basically been trying to mentor Henry throughout the film on how to pick up a chick. And, yes. You know, I do like that, you know, there at the end of the movie where, you know, he hands the book to, you know, Henry, and, you know, it's like, go get your girl.
Yeah. Because, like, there's that sequence that they're running from the zombie sharks.
Yes.
It's probably like, okay, that's where the rest of the money in the budget went, was the zombie sharks. So that was badass. But
did you have flashbacks of Sharknado? Because I was absolutely thinking Sharknado.
But, like, when she starts stripping her off, and he's, like, trying to talk her out of it, and she jumps off the ship, and he's like, I almost saw her ankles. He's like, well, you would have seen a lot more if you'd kept your cake holes shut. Yes.
So, I mean, there were some funny moments to the film, so it wasn't all serious. You know, having only seen it one time, I'm sure there's probably some things that I missed, but...
Yeah, like I said, overall, even though, like I said, there was a few problems with it, it was a good story. I mean, it's worth seeing. It's worth seeing again at some point. Yeah, like I said, there was like a few problems where they probably spent more money in certain spots and neglected other spots instead of... But overall, it was not a bad film. I actually really enjoyed it. So, speaking of fathers, what do you think of the My Father, La Antigüedad?
I am thoroughly enjoying it. I do think either it's blasted my taste buds, or it has sort of mellowed out a little bit. You know, the spicy notes were... In fact, as I talk more, like, I can still feel them a little bit on my tongue. So I think it may just be that it's, you know, dulled my taste buds.
Yeah, because I think the strength is maintained throughout, but it's gotten a little bit more balanced. Because, like, it's got a lot of different tobaccos in it, but it's very well balanced. I mean, they blend together nicely. There's nothing really overpowering one way or the other. Like I said, it definitely has a strong pepper kick at the start, but it kind of all blends together as you go, and it's a very enjoyable cigar. Not a bad price point. I think it's like nine something.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, when you know, I talk to a lot of different people about cigars, and, you know, folks oftentimes have a perception that if you don't spend, you know, anywhere from $15 to $30 on a cigar, you don't get a good stick, and that's can't be farther from the truth. And you know,
yeah, because, like, the New World's a great... I mean, it was, like, a number one cigar of the year, and it's a $7 stick. I mean... Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, this is a good... You know, I mean, I would put this stock this in the humidor on a regular basis. Hands down. I could see myself going to this, you know. This is not going to be the last Antiquidad that I smoke.
And with that, we'll be right back.
You don't know what this is, do you? Aztec gold. The heathen gods placed upon the gold a terrible curse. 10 years we've searched. Every last piece we have found, save for this.
Hello, Poppy.
They've taken Elizabeth.
Welcome aboard the Black Pearl.
We must save her.
Where do we start?
Jack Sparrow. He talked about the Black Pearl. Make a deal with him. He can lead us to it.
You forget your place. You are a blacksmith.
If you spring me from this cell, I shall take you to the Black Pearl and your bonny lass.
You're a pirate.
Forgot one very important thing, mate. I'm Captain Jack Sparrow. Not sure I deserve it. You're not facing normal pirates. Cruel, demented, vicious pirates, to be certain.
Say goodbye! Goodbye.
But cruel, demented, vicious pirates who cannot be killed.
The moonlight shows us for what we really are.
That's interesting.
We are cursed men.
I hardly believe in ghost stories anymore.
You best start believing in ghost stories, Miss Turner. You're in one.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30. And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30. So, what are we drinking this week?
We're drinking another beer out of Dutch's Brewery. This is the Black Butte Porter.
It kind of sounds like a pirate name, Black Butte. Or yeah. Black Butt. That'd be a pirate name for sure.
Arr. But,
he'll make you walk the plank.
Yeah, so, you know, what you're going to get with this are, you know, chocolate, coffee, creaminess, and a, you know, more of a roasted finish. You know, the thing about the porters is you're really getting into a lot of, you know, different malt varieties and type of thing. So
yeah, we drink a lot of stouts, and the difference between a porter and a stout, stouts are pretty much a style of porter. It's usually a strong, yeah, the porters are more, you get more coffee notes in the porters, and with the stouts you get a little more of the chocolatiness. But yeah, this one's got a good mix of the chocolate and coffee and creaminess of a good porter.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And this is going to sport Cascade, Bravo, and Tettnang hops. Comes in at 5.2% ABV, 30 IBUs. So literally, no hop bite or bitterness or anything about this. One of the things I really like about, you know, this brewery is on their website is a wealth of information. One is home brewers. You actually get, you know, their kind of all grain recipe on, hey, here's the ingredients and everything that goes into, you know, how you can brew this version of beer at home. But then also, too, is a number of different food recipes, everything from main courses to desserts to pair this beer with. And, you know, I wish more, you know, breweries had that kind of information.
Yeah, because I see occasionally, like, some food pairing, but the actual included recipes is kind of awesome, you know, for people who are, you know, if you're a liker of fine beers and also brewing your own beers, you tend to like, you know, coming up with some cooking as well. It's yeah, the hobbies all kind of go together. So if you have brew you a nice beer, you can always cook you a nice meal to go with it.
Absolutely. And, you know, kind of the other thing, too, is, you know, being out of Oregon, and you can actually take a, you know, virtual tour up the Black Butte Mountain and stuff. So I kind of thought that was kind of fitting as to how they came up with this name and everything else. I guess after a long hike, you want a refreshing brew. And, you know, I could see this being one that I would reach for.
Yeah, because the other things with porters and stouts is they still taste pretty good even when they're a little bit warmer. So if you're going to pack a couple beers in your backpack when you're going on a day of hiking, even if you're not carrying a full cooler, still gonna be pretty good, even though if it's, you know, served at, you know, room temperature.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's where a lot of people, you know, make a mistake. I mean, I see people oftentimes, they've got their glassware, you know, sitting in a freezer, and they immediately pour a stout or something into it, you know, thinking that colder is better. And, you know, we've talked about proper temperature, proper glassware, and not necessarily to be beer snobs, but, you know, if you're really looking to try to taste different notes and to experience a particular style of beer, best to do so at the proper temps and, you know, everything of that nature. Yeah, I mean, all of the aromas and everything come out, and you can taste the beer for what it really is intended to be.
Yeah, well, your big micro log, you know, macro brewery lagers and pilsners, by all means, serve them cold so you don't have to taste them. But when you're dealing with particularly stouts and porters, you know, they do unlock more flavor notes at, you know, a little bit, you know, higher temperature, you know, certain more of the 50 degree range instead of like the 32 fresh out of the fridge range. So yeah, don't be afraid to, you know, let your beer warm up a little when you're drinking these styles.
Yeah, now if it's, you know, like you said, if it's Bud Light or something, no, colder the better. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's just how it was intended. And, you know, as much as we pick on those guys, I mean, they've got a style of beer that, you know. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that.
And there are some good lagers out there. So just because something's a lager doesn't mean it's a macro brewed Budweiser. I mean, you can still find, like, good traditional made lagers. And those, I tend to like to drink those when it's like, you know, especially in the summer when it's like, because I'm not a big IPA fan. I don't like the super bitterness, but a nice refreshing lager, you know, when you're sitting around the grill, you know, keep you cool on a warm day, and it's still a beer.
Get that mind right. Absolutely. So, you know, for me, I think I'm at a solid 4 on this beer.
Yeah, this is a damn good porter. Too bad they're not available local to us. Yeah.
Well, I haven't looked to see. I mean, it could be, you know, something we can get that's not exclusive. But I just can't say that I've went and particularly looked for this specific beer in the local Atlanta market.
I'm just, they have a find near you. I'm just typing in and see if there is any kind of, if it is available, near us. Nope, does not look like it's available in Georgia. So, yeah, if you're in one of the states where this beer is available, then by all means, give it a try.
Yeah, so it looks like, you know, they're in 28 states right now. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe it could be something, you know, maybe we can start getting some in, having some folks try it. Who knows? I mean, there was a time that we didn't have Yuengling. There was a time we didn't have Lead Slinger, so...
Yeah, if you find something you like that, you know, out on a road trip or whatnot, and it's not local to you, you know, always talk to your local, you know, liquor store or wherever, you know, especially if it's a place where you frequent a lot, you know, and, you know, you're kind of known to the staff. You know, you can put in requests and say, hey, you guys don't have this. This is something I recommend. You know, they may look into getting it on their menu.
And yeah, if you want to get extremely hipster, here's a bit of knowledge. Their beers are vegan friendly.
Okay, I can't drink anymore. I'm going to dip some bacon in it just to make sure it's non-vegan.
So
get your damn fidget spinners away from me.
Hey, don't make me break out my lacy rompa.
God, rompers. I mean, all it is a freaking overalls with the legs cut off. If you want to get your redneck romper, just some nice Carhartt coveralls and chop the legs off.
Man, that's a waste of a nice pair of Carhartt coveralls.
Yeah, when I start seeing mechanics wear fucking rompers, yeah, it's that's what step too far. I don't trust a mechanic that I can see his legs.
We have crossed a bridge too far.
Yep, I'm like, yeah, I think I'll be going elsewhere. Oh, so with that, we'll be right back.
15 men on a dead man's chest.
Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum.
Drink and the devil be done for the rest.
Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum.
Cigar, and we're back. Well, you know, no science this week because, you know, we figured since we're talking about pirates, we should do a new segment, Rum 30, and review a fine rum we've acquired. And also because I didn't have time to do any research because I got engaged this weekend. So shout out to my very own pirate queen. So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, we're drinking Ludslinger's Black Flag Rum.
Yeah, I mean, if we got to get a, you know, a piratey themed rum, can't go wrong with some Ludslinger's Black Flag.
Yeah, and you know, people have probably heard us talk about Ludslinger whiskey, and you know, this is just another one of the fine products. So, you know, Black Flag Rum is going to be a spiced rum, but I mean, you know, it's. I mean, got a group of, you know, veterans behind the company. Everything is made here in the good old U.S. of A. And, you know, it just tastes amazing. Like, one sip and I was hooked.
Yeah, as they say, it's a spiced rum that will force your other rums to walk the plank. Yeah, and I dig the piratey theme, too. You know, there it's... Yeah, the usual Ludslinger's logo has changed. Instead of the eagle carrying an M4, now it's carrying a musket with a pirate flag. And then there's like a, you know, kind of a map theme to the the bottle as well. But
I wonder if we had a red ruby, if the stars would align and we could find the trident.
We might. If I drink enough of this, I will go to the ocean and look for the trident. Because I mean, it's a really good spiced rum. I mean, you can drink it straight up without you know, doing a rum and coke or anything else. This is almost drinks, because I typically don't drink a lot of rum because, you know, I quit eating, like, drinking sugary stuff, so now anything that's super sweet, just I can't handle it. But this is more like a whiskey to me. It's there's not a lot of sweetness. It's got a little bit of a spice to it, but it's not as sweet as, you know, your Bacardi or your typical white rums. I mean, this drink's more like a whiskey to me.
Yeah, and, you know, it's... I get that same, you know, but, I mean, just the spicy note, you know, just really comes through. And, I mean, it creates a balance and, you know, just... I mean, I can't find another rum at this price point that is nearly as drinkable as what the Black Flag is.
Yeah, I mean, what was the price point? 20-something, something like that?
It's like 19, so yeah, it's like $20 after tax.
It's a fairly affordable rum, but it doesn't taste like, say, your rot gut rum that you normally would get for in that price point. I mean, it's a lot cheaper than my other favorite rum, which is the Ron Zapaca at like $40 a bottle or up from there when you start getting some of the aged rum. So it's definitely a rum you could drink all the time, you know, at that price point, and not feel like you're drinking a cheaper rum.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this has, you know, a much better flavor and a much bolder flavor to me than any of the Captain Morgans or any of the other rums out there. So this is, you know, since we've been able to get it, this has been my go-to for rum. And
also, like, you know, even though it's a good rum that you can drink on its own, you know, at that price point, I don't feel bad using it in cocktails as well. You know, because like I said, if I'm buying a $50 bottle of rum, I'm drinking that straight up. It's not going in a rum and coke. But this one, it's good on its own, and it's good in, you know, whatever else you want to put it in.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like my belly.
Make some Black Flag mojitos.
Black Flag mojitos, huh?
Rum runners, hurricanes. That's all the rum cocktails I can think of right now.
I don't ever really make many rum cocktails. I'm more so just put it on some ice and down it.
Yeah. When you go into the islands, man, you know, or you're on a cruise ship, you got to drink some kind of fruity rum drink. And I would not mind a little Ludslinger's in my fruity rum drink next time I'm on vacation.
No, not at all. That's about the only time that you can get away with drinking the fruity drinks and everything. Like, Rachel's trying to make fun of me, and I'm like, nah, it doesn't work that way. I'm on a boat.
Yeah. On a cruise ship, you're expected.
Yes.
I mean, you can still drink straight from the bottle, Captain Jack style. And with this, I mean, shoot, don't even need a glass. I'm just going to give me a bottle. I'll sip on it until I pass out or until I think I'm a pirate.
End up in a safe.
Yeah. Because the more rum you drink, the more piratey you talk.
Arr.
Come here, lass. Laddie. You want to walk me plank? Show me the booty.
There's treasure to behold.
Oh, I think that's all the bad pirate puns we can come up with for now. So yeah, 1 to 5 as we do with our beers. What are you giving the Black Flag?
I'm at a 5, bro.
Yep, totally give this 5 Black Pearls. And as Captain Jack says, why is all the rum gone? Because I fucking drank it. That's why.
Hello, my name is Jay Patrick, and that is Adam.
Hello.
Join us for the Adam and JP Show.
Hello.
Available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Hello.
Get it now.
Hello.
Oh, we're just kidding. If you love comics, video games, movies, wrestling.
Who doesn't? These are all great things that make us who we are.
That's true. Then you should join us for the Adam and JP Show. You actually can get it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Yeah, that part was true.
And right here on the ESO Network.
And adamandjp.com.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. This week in news, we've got a fairly extensive lineup that's going to consist of some movie news, some Netflix stuff, a few reboots in the works. It looks like a resurgence from our childhood is going to be coming back in the form of an animated series. And then, you know, some video game news related to petitions, online pricing, and so on and so forth. So with no further ado... we got our third trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming, and I've watched both trailers. So there was the U.S. trailer, and then there's the international trailer. And it's really funny the differences between the U.S. and international. So the U.S. trailer, the Spider-Man, you know, costume is no doubt the, you know, main focal point, and everything about it screams Stark Technologies, you know.
Look at the cool piece of tech we got.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know.
I just want to see the full-on Iron Spider suit from the comics.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the international version, that is not the focus at all. And it's really weird, too, to hear the dubbing and not the actual actors' accents and voices. I'm like, this doesn't feel like the same movie.
Who the fuck is Tom Holland?
He is killing it as Spider-Man. That's all I can say.
Spider-Man,
yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, I got to say, man, with this film, you know, set, I think it's set for release July 7th.
Yeah, we're coming up about a little over a month away, so get ready, Spider friends.
Yeah, and... you know, everybody's seen, you know, the trailer of the Marriott where Dragon Con is, you know, hosted and that type of thing. So, you know, it's really awesome to see some of these Atlanta landmarks and everything and, you know, ATL Wood on the map.
Oh, yeah, there's so many things being shot here nowadays. I think it's about time for me to do up my headshots, start getting the acting game.
Yeah, absolutely. Never know. Might land you a biggest shit biker role.
Exactly. I mean, if Rocco can be a biker, hell, I can be the next Sons of Anarchy reboot or whatnot. I got a beard for it now.
Yeah, absolutely. We just got to expose more tattoos and, you know, you just got to step the burliness up just a little bit, but you'll be there. Up next is Wonder Woman. And, you know, I got to say, like, dude, I have heard nothing but positive things. And, you know, so far, you know, this film is, you know, bringing in over $200 or $200 million internationally. So,
yeah, I've not had a chance to see it, but it's probably on my agenda to see sometime this week because, you know, I was kind of hesitant about seeing this. I didn't want to see this one open at night because, you know, the last couple DC Universe movies have been a little disappointing. I did enjoy, Suicide Squad, but can't stand the original Superman, and Batman v Superman wasn't much better, with the exception of Wonder Woman and Batman. Those were the highlights of the movie. But so far, I've heard nothing but positive reviews of this Wonder Woman movie. They've definitely, from what I hear, lightened up the tone of it quite a bit over what we've seen so far out of the DCU.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so this film right now has finished, you know, the fourth biggest Warner Bros. Opening ever. So, I mean, you know, just to put it on a scale, you know, the previous film was 50 Shades of Grey, which opened with $85.2 million. Right now, domestically, this film's pulled in over $100.5 million. So, you know, I mean, all the publicity and everything else surrounding, you know, 50 Shades of Grey and, you know, all the books and everything. And now here it is, you know, the nerds have spoken. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I definitely got to go and see this. But, you know, I mean, Rotten Tomatoes, of all places, you know, is giving the film a 93%.
Yeah, like, if anybody's going to trash it, it'd be them. So if they're like, it's not bad, yeah, you should probably see it.
Yeah.
Set in the World War, you know, with Captain America, we saw like a World War II set superhero movie. You know, this takes us back to World War I, which never really seen a superhero movie set in that time frame. So it's going to be interesting to see, to finally sit down and watch it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, just wanted to give props, let folks know to go out and check it out if you haven't already. And
We've seen it, maybe we'll give you a review by next episode.
Yep, absolutely. Up next is something that I'm a little bit torn on.
On what?
Frank Miller's Sin City is set to be rebooted as a TV series. And, I mean, even though they pulled in some big names from folks that have worked on, you know, some of shows and movies such as the Underworld franchise or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Is there any news on where it's going to be a series at, though?
It looks like Fox.
That may be not a good thing. Because I don't know, Sin City kind of like needs an R rating.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I'm kind of...
I could understand if it was a Netflix or even an HBO series, but on mainstream cable, I'm not sure how that's going to play out too well.
Yeah, I mean, so it's got Glenn Mazzara from The Walking Dead, The Shield. It's joined as a writer with Lynn Weisman from Underworld. You know, it's supposed to stick close to the source material of the graphic novels, but then again, I don't really know how you do that on, you know, some of the networks. And, you know, Fox may have been something that was quoted on another one, but it looks like, you know, the quotes are networks are beginning to circle. So who knows where it actually lands. You know,
yeah, I think that's going to be one that's going to be better for it if it ends up somewhere where they are not constrained with network censorship. Even if it was went to like FX or something like that, where it wasn't on like Fox Main, but you know, because you know, whatever FX or even AMC tends a little bit more, be more risque with what they put on
and
TV.
And maybe, you know, with The Walking Dead and The Shield and stuff like that, you know, maybe we see it on AMC, you know, or something along those lines. But I mean, A Dame to Kill For wasn't the highlight, but I mean the first one
was excellent.
You know, where they actually use snippets from the graphic novels and, you know, the very, you know.
And if it ends up on AMC, we may get Talking Sin with Chris Hardwick.
That would not surprise me one bit. So then up next is, you know, a flashback. Well, yeah, before we go into that, Netflix in the news. So we've talked a little bit about Netflix and them doing a Castlevania series. Well, I've been big fans of the video games. But it looks like right now we've gotten our first trailer and, you know, news of a July 7th release date for this as well. You know, it basically, Netflix has come out and said it's the last surviving member of a disgraced clan fights to save Eastern Europe from Dracula.
European G's.
It's going to look very dark and dramatic, which is surely just the thing you're going to want to watch at the height of summer. So,
yeah, I'm just interested to see which Castlevania characters they use. If we're going to get Simon Belmont or some of the other Belmont clan, or if they're just going to do completely new story and set in that universe. So it's going to be interesting to see.
I mean, and somewhere I read like there was only going to be like four episodes or something like that in the first series. So maybe it's more of a pilot just to see people's reaction and that type of thing. I don't know. Like, I mean, with all the next gen stuff, like, can they just release the rights and us actually get a 3D Castlevania? Like, that would be freaking amazing to play on today's consoles or PC. But, you know, as all political rights go, that's still TBD. So Steven Spielberg is apparently in the works on recreating the 1990s cartoon series Animaniacs.
Animaniacs.
So
I used to love Animaniacs. I mean, even as a... Oh, shit. I was in high school, I think, when that came out, and I still watched it. I didn't care if it was a kid show, because it was... The humor in it and the writing was so excellent that it was... It had stuff for all generations, because there was some jokes in there that were just a little bit dirty. So, like, kids watching it would not understand them because they're just sophisticated enough. But, you know, parents and, you know, older brothers watching it laugh their balls off, and, like, you know, other kids don't know. Like, I remember one where they're searching a crime scene and they're like, "What are you looking for?" "Looking for prints." And Dot runs out with prints. And he's like, no, fingerprints. And she looks at prints and he smiles. She's like, "I ain't doing it." And, like, tosses him out the window.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, like, I mean, it used to be, you know, there were a lot of, I mean, you know, look at Ren and Stimpy, look at, you know, some of the other shows that we grew up with, and as adults, we go back and watch those, and like, huh, completely missed that one as a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, as of right now, no networks have, actually, you know, picked up on, you know, the... anything. In fact, Warner Bros. Has also decided to decline to comment on the reboot. So, I mean,
Spielberg, it's going to get made.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's
he needs to hurry up and get that freaking Ready Player One
out. Yes, I am highly anticipating Ready Player One.
Freaking Animaniacs, though, is the bomb.
So, up next, we're going to switch gears, start talking about some video game news. You know, we talked the last episode that we got our poster and, you know, trailer for Far Cry 5. And it looked relatively awesome. And, well, apparently now there's a petition to change Far Cry 5 villains to Muslims and have it take place in Canada or whatever. So,
fuck?
You know, I guess people don't want to admit that, hey, America, you know, has some... you know, crazy ass ideologies and stuff like that floating around, and, you know, cultist, and no, it's too close to home or whatever. But I say, fuck the pussies. Let's get this game made.
Exactly. Like, oh, I mean, this kind of reminds me of...
I hate this PC censorship, you know. Like, you want to fight Muslims? Great. You know, go freaking play any other war game out there. Yeah. Or, you know what?
Pick a Call of Duty and just non-World War II Call of Duty and... And go shoot terrorists.
Or better yet, you know, go sign your name on any, you know, branch of the armed services, and you too can go fight Muslims. But,
I mean, then again, just devil's advocate for a moment. Far Cry has always kind of been a little bit Indiana Jones, and Indiana Jones was always fighting Nazis. It's, you know, so our modern-day Indiana Jones of, you know... We don't have the Nazis, but we got terrorists.
But, I mean, for a game that, you know, explicitly looks like it's, you know, targeting, you know, the... I mean, dude, have you seen all the, like, Antifa, you know, freaking, you know, videos and stuff like that? I mean, dude, these people aren't packing weapons. They're packing cheeseburgers. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, let's get this game made. Let's play it. Let's enjoy it. And if you get a little bit hurt about it, suck it up, buttercup.
That just kind of reminds me of the, what was it, Resident Evil 5 that was set in Africa. And everybody's like, oh my God, we have a white main character shooting a bunch of black people. It's set in Africa. Who the fuck else is he going to be fighting? Like, it's a video game. Like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, we politicize way too much.
Yeah. Go sit in your safe space with your fidget spinner and let me play my games.
In your romper?
No. That's the one thing I draw the line in. I'm not wearing a romper.
All right, so we're going to switch gears, get off the political fallacies, and, you know, something that surely to God nobody can politicize, but let's talk about Sonic Mania. So, you know, this game is set to release on August 15th. It's going to be a throwback to the original 2D, you know, very Sega-esque, you know, graphic style and everything, but it's going to be available on PC, Xbox One, PS4, and I think Steam. So, you know, I was watching some of the gameplay, and it looked, you know, straight up like, you know, freaking Sega Genesis.
That'll be interesting, because I've never been a Sega owner, so the only time I've ever played Sonic is either, you know, a demo game at some store or at a friend's house that had Sega. I was always a Nintendo, PlayStation kid. So it's going to be cool to finally be able to, like, you know, give Sonic a whirl.
Yeah, and it's going to, you know, so you're going to actually have the option of playing Sonic, Knuckles, or Tails. And then there's also supposed to be, you know, some multiplayer aspect as well. So, you know, I'm kind of excited. I like throwbacks and stuff like this. I mean, that was one of the reasons that I bought a Wii and, you know, stuff like that. So I enjoy, you know, being able to throw back and, you know, hell, I remember as a kid, you know, Sonic was hard to keep up with on just the freaking Sega. I can only imagine what
it'll
be.
When you get on a run, it's like your eyes can't keep up with this screen. Now with a system as fast as we got, I'm like, I think our eyes might be too old for it now. He's like, I can't keep up. I'm going to stroke out.
And some Nintendo news. So apparently Nintendo Switch online service pricing has been revealed. Kind of weird to release a system and not charge anybody for, you know, online play or anything, and then say, oh, well, you know, next year you're going to need to pay for this.
It's like any good drug dealer. The first taste is free, and then once you're hooked, you got to start paying for it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I can't necessarily, based on the feedback, say that the taste was good, and maybe that's the need for a charge is, you know, I hear a lot of people complain about, you know, the servers slow to respond and everything else of that nature. So I guess if you don't have that revenue stream coming in, but, you know, I have never really thought of, you know, these games really as being very multiplayer intensive or anything, yeah. But maybe, you know, I'm a lonely gamer, and maybe that's why I'm missing out on that whole aspect. But
the paying for online play has kind of become standard across the industry. I mean, if you want to be on the PS, you know, network or Xbox Live, you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
So, and with paying for it, there is money generating to buy better servers and improve the online.
You have better developers, more developers, people to handle.
And with
support.
The Switch being primary, well, you know. I mean, it's a house system, but it being portable is also one of the big selling points where you can just take your game on the go. You know, that online aspect may come more important in the future as more and more games come out for the system to take advantage of that portability.
Yeah, and so, you know, the pricing as it stands right now, looks like you can get a one-month membership for $3.99, a three-month membership for $7.99, or purchase a year, you know, of online service for $19.99,
which is still cheaper than Xbox One or PlayStation Network.
You know, if you compare that to, you know, the PSN or Xbox Live,
which is like what, $50 a year, something like that.
Yeah, $60. I think it's like $59.95, but occasionally you can find deals and get it for like $49 and stuff. So.
Especially if they include like with the PSN as well. There's like the monthly downloads, or there's the kind of like the Netflix video game library where you can play all the old games on the network. You know, if they do something like that and include like classic Nintendo games in it, I mean, that'd be worth the freaking $20 a year or whatever it is.
Dude, if they would do, instead of the crap that they tried to pull with a Nintendo classic, but if they would make some of the games, you know, available, you know, I would not mind forking out, you know, $20 or so. You know, I mean, that would probably keep me away from the ROMs and the emulators and, you know, the other methods of playing those games. So
yeah, if I can play old school Super Mario or the original Zelda, yeah, I'd fork over the money for a Switch in the online membership as well. Some straight up Contra.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, I know most folks probably listening to this would just say, well, I'll just get a Raspberry Pi and install RetroPie. Yeah, that's all fine and dandy, and who's to say that we haven't, but, I mean...
There's something that's nostalgic about playing Nintendo on a Nintendo, man.
Yeah, I mean, if I can take it anywhere and it be portable, then, you know, yeah. My Raspberry Pi is not necessarily portable. And with that, we'll wrap us up for news.
All right. With that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com, and we're also on the ESO Network, ESOPodcast.com. Check out, we have a Zazzle store. You can find links to that on our website. Also, if you want some cool smoking shirts, go to RealMenSmokeCigars.com. They have our Cigar Nerd shirts there. Also, they've just released a whole new catalog of shirts. There's a lot of new designs and new styles of shirts there. Go check them out. Get you some Strike Force energies before you go out pirating. StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code Cigar Nerds. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod. Go leave us, you know, and we're also on iTunes, Stitcher, other places. Go on iTunes, leave us a review. That way more people hear about the show and, you know, spread the word of the Cigar Nerds. And remember, as Captain Jack Sparrow says, not all treasures are silver and gold, mate. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.